Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Monday, March 25th, 2024. A New York appeals court reduces the amount of the bond that Donald Trump must post to cover a $450 million civil fraud verdict while he appeals it, down to $175 million, and gives him 10 more days beyond today's original deadline, all to not have any of his assets seized. And another judge in New York in the hush money criminal case against Donald Trump rejects his attorney's argument that the prosecution has withheld documents and there must be a delay, and sets the trial date for April 15th. United Nations Security Council passes a resolution for the first time demanding a humanitarian ceasefire in the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, 14-0, with the U.S. abstaining. That leads Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to cancel his government's delegation's visit to Washington, D.C. this week to talk about the pending Israeli military offensive in the southern Gazan city of Rafah. Russian President Vladimir Putin now says that radical Islamists carried out Friday's massacre at a concert hall in Moscow, but still insists it's part of Ukraine's attacks on Russia. U.S. State Department spokesperson today asked about the warning the U.S. passed on to Russia of a possible ISIS-K attack. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signs into law a bill that bans children under 14 years old from having social media accounts and requires those 14 or 15 to get a parent's consent. And three top Boeing executives, including the CEO Dave Calhoun, announced their retirements as the company is facing scrutiny and investigations over quality control after that door plug on an Alaska Airlines plane fell off mid-flight in January. And we begin with developments in the legal cases that Donald Trump is facing. Stories from ABC News. Former President Donald Trump will stand trial over alleged hush payments to porn star Stormy Daniels, beginning with jury selection on April 15th. Judge Juan Merchan ruled Monday, rejecting Trump's request for an additional delay. The judge decided Monday that the district attorney of New York County is not at fault for the late production of documents from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York. Trump last April pleaded not guilty to a 34-count indictment charging him with falsifying business records. And also from ABC News, a New York appellate court has ruled that former President Donald Trump can post a lower bond to cover his $464 million civil fraud judgment. The Appellate Division First Department said that Trump can post a bond in the amount of $175 million to cover the judgment. Trump's attorneys had argued obtaining a bond for the full amount was a practical impossibility. The panel of five judges also opted to delay enforcement of the judgment for 10 days. The ruling comes as Trump and his sons faced a Monday deadline to pay or secure a bond or risk New York Attorney General Letitia James beginning the process of seizing the former president's prized assets. And that's all from ABC News. Donald Trump attended the hush money payment trial hearing today in New York City and then held a news conference at nearby 40 Wall Street, the Trump building.
A lot of things happened today. This is all about election interference. This is all Biden-run things, meaning Biden and his thugs, because I don't know if he knows he's alive. And it's a shame. It's a shame what's happening to our country. This is election interference. They are doing things that have never been done in this country before. We've never had anything like it, certainly not at this level, but we've really had nothing like it that I've been able to find. It does happen a lot in third world countries, banana republics. If you look at what we just left, you have a case which they're dying to get this thing started. The judge cannot go faster. He wants to get it started so badly. And there's tremendous corruption. You have Pomerantz, Mark Pomerantz. He was Hillary Clinton's lawyer, or Democrat National Committee's lawyer. He worked in Paul Weiss. He walked in and he took over the district attorney's office. Nobody's ever seen anything like that, to prosecute Trump. And then they wouldn't do what he wanted to do, and he goes out and he writes a book. Long before any decisions were made, he writes a book about it. And the book gets published, and everybody's reading his book. And the judge said, there's nothing wrong with that. And if you look at Bragg, Bragg had a fit over that. Bragg said, this trial is now dead. We can't do the trial. Well, that was one of the problems, and the judge should have allowed that to happen. And you had other instances, like Colangelo. Colangelo is a radical left from the DOJ who was put into the state working with Letitia James, and then was put into the district attorney's office to run the trial against Trump. And that was done by Biden and his thugs also, because they can't win an election because of the borders, because of energy prices, because of inflation, because of Afghanistan, the worst and most embarrassing day in the history of our country. He can't win because of Russia, because of all the problems, because of Ukraine being attacked by Russia. And he can't win because of the October 7th attack of Israel, which he should have never allowed to happen, would have never happened if I were president. Ukraine would have never been attacked if I was president. And you wouldn't have inflation if I was president. We didn't have inflation. So all of these things, so what they do is they do election interference, which is court cases, and let's try and tie him up, and let's take as much of his money as possible. I respect the appellate division for substantially reducing that ridiculous amount of money that was put on by a corrupt judge named Ngoron. He ought to be looked at, seriously looked at, especially what he did with valuations. He's the one. He's a fraudulent valuator, where he values Mar-a-Lago at $18 million, and people say it's worth 50 to 100 times that much, the biggest experts in the business.
Former President Donald Trump, 2024 Republican presidential candidate, at a news conference with his lawyers in New York City after attending the hush money trial hearing and the judge there setting a trial date. And concerning that civil fraud case and the reduction by the New York Appeals Court of the bond to $175 million, the judge ruling in that case that Donald Trump illegally inflated the value of his assets to get better loan and insurance terms. Washington Post writes that New York Attorney General Letitia James's office said that the underlying outcome of the trial remained in place. She said Donald Trump is still facing accountability for his staggering fraud. The court has already found that he engaged in years of fraud to falsely inflate his net worth and unjustly enrich himself, his family, and his organization. The $464 million judgment plus interest against Donald Trump and the other defendants still stands. Donald Trump on Friday, in a post on his social media platform, said that he had almost $500 million in cash, but accused the judge and the New York Attorney General of trying to take the cash away so I can't use it on the campaign. Reporter asked him today if he plans now to spend his now freed up cash to get elected.
You mentioned the cash you had. You said on Friday it was something like $500 million. You intended to put some of that into the campaign. Now that the bond's been reduced, are you going to start putting money into your campaign?
Yeah.
You haven't done that since 2016.
Well, first of all, it's none of your business, I mean, frankly. But I might do that. I have the option. But if I have to spend $500 million on a bond, I wouldn't have that option. I'd have to start selling things. I don't have to sell anything because it's a phenomenal company. Look, I built a phenomenal company. Someday they'll actually report that. I built a phenomenal company that's very low leverage, unbelievably low leverage, with a lot of cash, a lot of everything else. Why should I let a crooked judge make a decision to give $450 million that allows me to spend very little money on my campaign if I so choose? I'll be spending money on my campaign. I might spend a lot of money on my campaign, but I should have that option. A crooked judge shouldn't say, we're going to have you post a bond and take all of that money that I could be spending on a campaign or other things if I want to do other things. So we were gratified by the professionalism of the opinion today. I thought it was I think it's a very important opinion for New York. But the only thing that's going to really solve that problem is when I win, because you're going to have to win. Because no company is going to be coming to New York if I don't win that case. That case is a scam, it's a sham, and it's a hoax.
Former President Donald Trump, Republican presidential candidate, today in New York City at 40 Wall Street, the Trump Building. Trump Media and Technology Group, which operates Truth Social and is the result of a merger approved Friday by shareholders with Digital World Acquisition Corporation, is scheduled to begin trading as a public company on Tuesday on NASDAQ. The ticker is DJT. Story from Politico. The uproar inside NBC over Ronald McDaniel's hiring spilled into Monday morning as more of the network's top personalities denounced the deal with the former RNC chair, escalating a battle over the relationship between powerful media companies and Donald Trump's loyalists. The decision to hire McDaniel, which was unanimously supported by top network executives, has already divided and destabilized one of America's most storied news organizations, with internal dismay flaring on TextChange and Slack channels since the deal was announced late last week. That from Politico. This came up at today's White House briefing with the press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre.
Thanks, Karine. I wanted to ask you about former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel being hired by NBC News. Given that this is a White House that has condemned lies about January 6th, condemned lies about the 2020 election, what do you make of the network hiring somebody who participated in a phone call, pressuring Michigan officials to not certify certain votes?
So look, we're always very mindful about personnel decisions in this instant made by a media organization. I'll say a couple of things and I'll quote the president in a second. So you all heard him at the Gridiron dinner very recently, about 2 weekends ago. He spoke directly about critical role that journalists play. And they have in protecting our democracy by making sure that the public knows the truth, that the public knows the facts. And what he said is, we need you. Democracy is at risk, and the American people need to know. In fractured times, they need a context and a perspective. They need substance to match the enormity of the task. It is a big task that journalists have, and we understand that. And the facts and the truth are critical here. I'm not going to make any comments on that person, on a personnel decision, but as more broadly speaking, it is important. It is a burden on all of us here, right, to be really mindful about that, and that the public understands what the facts are and what the truth is.
Well, you're quoting the president talking about that kind of burden. Does this White House, does the president believe that voice like hers, that there's room for her in the national political discourse?
I mean, look, I'll answer it this way. We saw what happened on January 6th. We saw what happened when 2,000 people, mob, went to the Capitol and undermined our democracy, attacked our democracy, because they didn't believe in free and fair elections. And so we understand, and we saw that, and some of you may have been there, many of you reported it. And it was an attack on our democracy. And it is important that we are very clear to the public about the facts, that we are very clear to the public about the truth. And we understand the burden that you all have. And so I just want to be super mindful, not commenting on a personnel decision, but more broadly speaking, that is where we are. That is where we are as a country.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre at her news conference in the White House briefing room. The Union NBC Guild posting on X 2 weeks before NBC News proudly announced the hiring of Ronna McDaniel, execs illegally terminated 13 union journalists. Ronna encouraged a lie that many of our own journalists have spent countless hours debunking. Our journalism is tarnished by NBC News execs elevating a liar over the workers who have spent years delivering the kind of reporting that our newsrooms are typically known for. This is Washington Today. Story from The Guardian. For the first time, the UN Security Council has voted for a call for a ceasefire in Gaza after the U.S. abstained rather than using its veto as it's done on previous occasions. Russia and China have also previously vetoed texts. The resolution that passed was written by the 10 elected members to the council and proposed in the chamber by Mozambique's representative. Russia attempted to amend the text by restoring it to an earlier draft which included the word permanent, but the bid failed. 14 members of the UN Security Council voted for the resolution, while the U.S. abstained. That was reporting from The Guardian newspaper. This was the vote at the UN in New York City, with the Japanese ambassador presiding as the Security Council president for this month.
The result of the voting is as follows. 14 votes in favor, 0 vote against, 1 abstention. The draft resolution has been adopted as Resolution 2728-2024.
After the United Nations Security Council vote, the U.S. ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, explained why the U.S. abstained.
We're getting closer to a deal for an immediate ceasefire with the release of all hostages, but we're not there yet. Now let's be clear. A ceasefire could have come about months ago if Hamas had been willing to release hostages. Months ago. Instead, Hamas continues to stand in the way of peace, to throw up roadblocks, cower in tunnels beneath Gaza cities and behind under civilian infrastructure, and hide among the civilian population. So today, my ask to members of this council and to member states in every region of the world is this: speak out and demand unequivocally that Hamas accepts the deal on the table. Now, I hope I'm wrong, I really do, but I don't expect that from Russia and China, especially because they still can't bring themselves to condemn Hamas's terrorist attacks on October 7th. Just last week, Russia and China vetoed a resolution that condemned this horrific attack, a resolution the vast majority of this council supported. They have shown time and time again that they are not actually interested in advancing a durable peace through diplomatic efforts, nor for all their rhetoric are they interested in making any meaningful contributions to humanitarian efforts. Instead, they are using this devastating conflict as a political cudgel to try to divide this council at a time when we need to come together. It is deeply, deeply cynical, and we should all see through it. Colleagues, we appreciated the willingness of members of this council to take some of our edits and improve on this resolution. Still, certain key edits were ignored, including our request to add a condemnation of Hamas. And we did not agree with everything in the resolution. For that reason, we were unfortunately not able to vote yes. However, as I've said before, we fully support some of the critical objectives in this non-binding resolution, and we believe it was important for the council to speak out and make clear that any ceasefire must come with the release of all hostages. Indeed, as I've said before, the only path to a durable end to this conflict is the release of all hostages.
Linda Thomas-Greenfield, the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations at today's Security Council meeting. The ambassadors to the UN from Israel and Palestine is an observer state, were allowed to sit in and make statements. The Palestinian ambassador is Riyad Mansour.
It has taken 6 months. Over 100,000 Palestinians killed and maimed. 2 million displaced. And famine for this council to finally demand an immediate ceasefire. A vote for humanity to prevail, for life to prevail. The Palestinians in Gaza pleaded and appealed, shouted, cried, cursed, prayed, defied the odds to survive time and time again, and yet continue to face death, destruction and displacement, deprivation and disease, and an occupation made famine. They are bombed, besieged, buried under the rubble of the houses they had built. They are killed in their homes, in the streets, in hospitals, in ambulances, in UN shelters, and even in tents. Their ordeal must come to an end, and must come to an immediate end now. As we speak, families prepare to break their fast, missing loved ones around the table, and they may well find nothing to put on their children's plate. In fact, there is no home sheltering them. There is no table to gather around, and no plates to fill and no food to eat. They lost their homes. They lost loved ones, some of them still trapped under the rubble.
Palestinian Ambassador to the United Nations Riyad Mansour at today's Security Council meeting in New York City, after the council passed a resolution 14-0 calling for a ceasefire, the U.S. abstaining. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres posting on X, the Security Council just approved a long-awaited resolution on Gaza demanding an immediate ceasefire and the immediate and unconditional release of all hostages. This resolution must be implemented. Failure would be unforgivable. U.S. Senator Marco Rubio, Republican of Florida, posting on X, the U.N. Security Council just passed a resolution demanding Israel not defeat Hamas and to appease far-left anti-Semitic pro-Hamas activists. Biden decided not to veto it. The Israeli ambassador to the U.N., Gilad Erdan, also spoke after today's vote.
Colleagues, following this Council's adoption of UNSCR 2712 and 2720, which both called for the release of all hostages, Hamas did not stop to even contemplate for even one moment. It should be very clear that as long as Hamas refuses to release the hostages in the diplomatic channels, there is no other way to secure their return other than through a military operation. So on the one hand, the resolution says that taking civilian hostages is in violation of international law. Yet, on the other hand, despite the fact that you know Hamas won't listen to your calls and release the hostages, you demand a ceasefire. Take a moment and think about this moral contradiction. Your demand for a ceasefire without conditioning it on the release of the hostages not only is not helpful, but it undermines the efforts to secure their release. It is harmful to these efforts because it gives Hamas's terrorists, the hope to get a ceasefire without releasing the hostages. All members of the Council, all members should have voted against this shameful resolution.
The Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, sitting in at today's Security Council meeting. Story from Reuters. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Monday said he will not send a delegation as planned to Washington after the U.S. refrained from vetoing a U.N. Security Council proposal calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. Netanyahu, according to a statement from his office, said that Washington's failure to block the proposal was a clear retreat from its previous position and would hurt war efforts against Hamas, as well as efforts to release over 130 hostages in Gaza captivity. In light of the change in the American position, Prime Minister Netanyahu decided the delegation would not leave, his office said. The White House denied that the U.S. abstention reflected a change in American policy. The high-level delegation was due to travel to Washington to discuss a planned Israeli military operation in the southern city of Rafah, where more than 1 million Palestinians are taking shelter. That was the reporting from Reuters. This came up at the White House briefing with the National Security Communications Advisor, John Kirby.
Today, as you all know, we abstained on a UN Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza till the end of Ramadan and the release of all the hostages. Our vote does not, I repeat, does not represent a shift in our policy. We've been very clear, we've been very consistent in our support for a ceasefire as part of a hostage deal. That's how the hostage deal is structured, and the resolution acknowledges the ongoing talks. We wanted to get to a place where we could support this resolution, but because the final text does not have key language that we think is essential, such as condemning Hamas, we couldn't support it. Though, because it does fairly reflect our view that a ceasefire and the release of hostages come together, we abstained. Defense Minister Gallant is here today meeting with Mr. Sullivan, in fact, as we speak. He'll have other meetings while he's in town today and tomorrow, certainly with Secretary of Defense Austin tomorrow. And so we certainly look forward to having those discussions with him and making it clear to the defense minister that the United States continues to stand with Israel as they fight Hamas and will continue to work with might and main to get those hostages back with their families where they belong. Thank you.
John, what was the president's reaction to the decision by Netanyahu not to send an Israeli delegation this week?
I got to tell you, Steve, we're kind of perplexed by this. A couple of points that need to be stated and, in fact, restated. Number one, it's a non-binding resolution, so there's no impact at all on Israel and Israel's ability to continue to go after Hamas. Number two, as I said in my opening statement, it does not represent a change at all in our policy. It's very consistent with everything that we've been saying we want to get done here. And we get to decide what our policy is. The Prime Minister's office seems to be indicating through public statements that we somehow changed here. We haven't. And we get to decide what our policy is. It seems like the Prime Minister's office is choosing to create a perception of daylight here when they don't need to do that. So again, no change in our policy.
What does this do to the relationship between the President and Prime Minister Netanyahu?
I have no doubt that the two leaders will have follow-on discussions as they have, as appropriate, throughout this conflict.
White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby at a news conference today at the White House. Senator Bernie Sanders, independent from Vermont, posting on X, Netanyahu is upset. He canceled a delegation to D.C. because the U.S. abstained from a resolution calling for a ceasefire. But he's not so upset that he'll turn down $3.3 billion in taxpayer dollars to fund his immoral war. No more money for Netanyahu to starve Palestinian children. That post from Senator Bernie Sanders. Washington Today continues in a moment.
Hi, it's Kayla from C-SPAN. Imagine 45 years ago when there was just a handful of television networks. C-SPAN first went on the air bringing an unfiltered view of government directly to America's living rooms. No spin, no commentary, just pure democracy in action.
And it's Greta from C-SPAN. It was a bold experiment. We finally had a front row seat to Congress, the White House, and the campaign trail, all without government funding.
As we celebrate 45 years and a legacy of unfiltered access, we ask for your support of a donation in honor of our four decades of service. Your gift, no matter how big or small, will help maintain this vital resource for access to the democratic process.
You can help ensure another 45 years of witnessing history unfold and empowering citizens to be informed and engaged in the political process. Visit cspan.org/donate today and join our 45th anniversary campaign.
Thank you for supporting C-SPAN, your unfiltered view of government. Visit cspan.org/donate today to make your gift of support. Thank you.
Welcome back to Washington Today. It's available as a podcast wherever you find your podcast and on the C-SPAN Now free mobile app. Reuters reports that Russian President Vladimir Putin says that the attack in Moscow on a concert hall on Friday that killed at least 139 people is, quote, part of Kyiv's regime's attacks on Russia. He says the attacks were committed by radical Islamists, but that the officials do not know who ordered it. He said we're interested in who benefits from it. Today, the U.S. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller was asked about the attack and the U.S. warning to Russia earlier this month.
Kremlin continues to try to pin the blame on Ukraine without any evidence, and Putin's ambassador to Washington has denied the fact that the U.S. has tipped off prior to the attack. Can you just walk us through there was a tip-off from the U.S., you know, he denied that there was anything from Washington. Can you just walk us through some of your communications with the Russians in the run-up to, you know, last Friday? And what do you know, when did you know it, and how did you communicate?
So, two things. With respect to the first question, there was no Ukrainian involvement, period. You've seen the Ukrainian government make that clear, and of course, with respect to these statements, the Russians have offered zero evidence because there is no evidence of Ukrainian involvement. With respect to the warnings that we provided to the government of Russia, yes, we did offer warnings to the government of Russia in early March about a planned terrorist attack in Moscow, specifically potentially targeting large gatherings, including concerts. We gave them that private warning consistent with our duty to warn that we have when we see or when we gather intelligence of terrorist attacks or potential terrorist attacks. You might recall that several months ago we warned the government of Iran about a potential terrorist attack by ISIS-K in Iran, one that ultimately quite tragically also came to be true. And it was because of that warning that we passed on to the Russian government that we issued a security warning on March 7, where we again said to U.S. citizens that we had information about a planned terrorist attack in Moscow, potentially including potentially targeting large gatherings, including concerts.
Was it communicated through the diplomatic channels?
I'm not going to speak to specific channels through which we communicated.
As you know, France today raised its threat, security level to the highest. Is there any concern on your end that U.S. interests, U.S. companies, diplomats might be under increasing danger abroad in Europe in this case?
Look, we always encourage United States companies operating overseas to be vigilant to threats in their area, and we issue security alerts in various countries around the world, but I don't have any updates to offer today.
State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller at his news conference at the State Department in Washington. The British ambassador to the United States, Karen Pierce, spoke today about Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the stakes for Europe at a program in Washington, D.C., at the Hudson Institute.
Just over two years ago, Putin launched this wholly unjustified full-scale invasion, breaking the UN Charter, breaking international norms, and particularly breaking all those mechanisms that have been set up in the Euro-Atlantic area since the end of the Second World War. And I think internationally, the Euro-Atlantic space is the most lawyered up for international agreements, for national minorities, for helping countries deal with their internal stability problems. And Putin drove a coach and horses through all that. And I, for one, I'm a little bit sad when I see the reaction among some of our friends in the global south to this invasion. Because if you can blow away all those mechanisms that were set up with such care since 1945, and particularly since the Berlin Wall came down to create a Europe whole and free, if you can blow those away so easily, no part of the world is safe, whether that's from Putin, or whether we need to have an eye on what any sort of victory for Putin, what sort of message that would give to the Chinese. So there's a huge amount at stake. And not to decry what's happening in the Middle East, which also deserves our attention, but I do wish that more countries around the world would see this invasion for what it is. We want to support Ukraine through this. We want to help Ukraine make a decisive effect on the battlefield so that if and when the time comes for negotiations, she goes into those negotiations in a good position.
The British ambassador to the United States, Karen Pierce, in Washington at the Hudson Institute. A changeover on the lead for a U.S. House committee dealing with China. Detroit Free Press reports that Congressman John Molinar, Republican from Michigan, has been named chair of the U.S. House committee looking at the economic and national security threats posed to the nation by China and the Chinese Communist Party. House Speaker Mike Johnson announced Monday. Molinar, a chemist who worked for Dow Chemical and served in the state legislature before being elected to Congress in 2014, will replace Congressman Mike Gallagher, Republican of Wisconsin, who announced last week that he would leave the U.S. House on April 19th. This is Washington Today. From Fox News, Florida will have one of the country's most restrictive social media bans for minors if it withstands expected legal challenges under a bill signed by Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on Monday. The bill will ban social media accounts for children under 14 and require parental permission for 15 and 16-year-olds. It was slightly watered down from a proposal DeSantis vetoed earlier this month, a week before the annual legislative session ended. That from Fox News, Governor DeSantis signed the bill in Jacksonville.
One of the things that I know a lot of parents have had concerns about is the role that the internet and social media play in the upbringing of young kids. And the speaker's done a lot of work on this, and I'm sure he'll talk about some of the different things. But I think one of the things that strikes me, particularly as somebody who has a background as being a prosecutor one time, is you look at young kids and you know there's dangers out there. Unfortunately, we've got predators who prey on young kids. And it was used to be, well, if they're out somewhere, maybe they're not being supervised, maybe some predator can strike. Now with things like social media and all this, you know, you can have a kid in the house, safe seemingly, and then you have predators that can get right in there, into your own home. You could be doing everything right, but you know how to get and manipulate these different platforms. And so it's created huge problems. I know there's a lot of other problems just generally. I will say last year we passed a piece of legislation primarily designed to empower teachers, making sure there was classroom discipline, a whole host of things. One of the things we did was say no cell phone use during school time, during the class. And people are, oh, hemming and hawing about that and everything, but the reality is that that has been done across Florida, and it's been successful. Being buried in those devices all day is not the best way to grow up. It's not the best way to get a good education. So we're proud of that, and I think what they've done today is going to build off that, and ultimately, you know, trying to help parents navigate this very difficult terrain that we have now with raising kids.
Governor Ron DeSantis, Republican from Florida, at the bill signing in Jacksonville today. NetChoice Vice President and General Counsel Carl Szabo, NetChoice is a trade association of online businesses, putting out a statement saying an unconstitutional law will protect exactly zero Floridians. HB3 is also bad policy because of the data collection on Floridians by online services it will, in effect, require. This will put their private data at risk of breach. HB3 forces Floridians to hand over sensitive personal information to websites or lose their access to critical information channels. This infringes on Floridians' First Amendment rights to share and access speech online. Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun, writes CNN, said Monday he intends to leave the beleaguered company by the end of the year in a major shakeup of the company's leadership. Boeing's chairman and the head of the commercial airplane unit are also leaving. Boeing has been buffeted by more than 5 years of problems with its airplanes, including two fatal crashes of the 737 MAX in 2018 and 19 that killed 346 people, and most recently, a door plug that blew out of the side of an Alaska Airlines 737 MAX in January, leaving a gaping hole in the side of the plane. Problems have led to multiple groundings for safety issues and more than $31 billion in cumulative losses. That was reporting by CNN. Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun was interviewed today by CNBC. And the first question you'll hear will refer to Mike Whitaker. That's the head of the FAA.
Last week, Mike Whitaker was interviewed by NBC, and he said that when he was out here, what he saw was a culture of move the product, move the plane. It was not a focus on quality control and safety management.
Yeah.
What was your reaction when you heard those comments?
Well, I recognized exactly what he was talking about because I heard it from all of our own people. Remember, we did a stand down immediately after the accident, and we listened to all our own folks. And we have this bad habit in our company, and actually in many large companies that have to assemble big products. When you do work out of a position, the message you send to your people is, and maybe that work was moved because of a shortage, maybe it was because you're trying to fix something that was non-conforming, but when you move it down the line, it sends a message to your own people that, wow, I guess the movement of the airplane is more important than the first-time quality of the product. And we have got to get that in way more balance,
but
without
Dave,
a doubt.
You've been on the board since 2010, 2011. This is not a new criticism of Boeing.
Yeah.
This has been out there for years that you guys are about pump the product, pump the product, pump the product, and not enough about quality control.
Yeah,
how do you change that?
You slow things down. You catch up. And just a reminder, in 2020, we didn't produce any airplanes in the MAX line. Zero. 21... we started the line back up. So we were going from zero and slowly, steadily increasing our rates. At that very same time, with insatiable demand on the customer side, we had a very sporadic supply side. And so these forces that have been with our industry for a long time probably got even more pronounced, without a doubt. And so our job has to be to sort of say, nope, raise our hand, everybody has to be able and capable of raising their hand and stopping a line if they have to. And that is the premise for going forward.
Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun interviewed today on CNBC. It was announced that he, along with Boeing's board chair and the head of the commercial airplane unit at Boeing, are all leaving their positions. Congressman Rick Larson of Washington State, the ranking Democrat on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, putting out a written statement. The Boeing company needs to get back to what it has done best, designing and engineering the safest and best airplanes in the world. That starts with Boeing getting back to its roots as an engineering company and away from its multi-decades focus of being a financial services company. Moving forward, the women and men who work at Boeing need leaders who match their commitment to safety and quality at every step of the plane-making process. Boeing's new leadership team must work hard to earn back the trust of its customers and the flying public. That statement from Congressman Rick Larson, Democrat of Washington State. On Wall Street today, the Dow down 162, NASDAQ down 44, S&P down 15. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Subscribe to C-SPAN's free evening newsletter, Word for Word, and get the stories making headlines in Washington emailed to you every day. Sign up at cspan.org/connect. Have a good night.